You're listening to PodcastJuice.net. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to PodcastJuice.net. You're listening to Geeked Out. And I'm your host, Michael Dean. And today I'm joined by Mr. Q Storm. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. I don't have all my ammunition for the show, but I'm a make do.
Make it do what it do. All right. Next up, Mr. Big Sexy and Sack. How are you, sir?
I, too, am not well armed, but I will also attempt to make it do what it do. Whatever the hell that means.
Was that a British accent? What were you doing?
Shots fired.
That was a bougie accent.
I'm sorry. That was a what?
That was a bougie accent.
Yeah, a little bougie black man. Nah, just joking. All right, next up, Mr. Sean Hill. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Package received, package signed for, package watched, and we're ready to roll.
Ooh. You came prepared, black man. We love that. Very rare.
That's how we do.
Too much packaging running around here, man.
Pause.
Not there's anything wrong with that.
And last but certainly not least, Mr. Aunt Pooh. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. Just realize, you know, you Negroes are ungrateful. Some of y'all want to open up emails. Some of y'all got excuses not getting packages.
Hell no.
Hard out here for a pimp.
Talk that talk. All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, we got a good show today. First thing, we're going to start out with something really good. The new show, Gotham. We've talked about this the last few weeks. The show has finally debuted, or will debut by the time this is released. And so we're going to give our review, first impressions of this show. You know, there's a lot of, is this going to be good? You know, how is this going to handle? Is no Batman, blah, 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 blah. Well, here's our scoop. So I'm going to turn it over first to Mr. Aunt Pooh. Aunt Pooh, set us up. Gotham, episode one. What is your viewpoint?
Overall, it's really flawed. It's really flawed. You can tell that there are two writers. Maybe they went back in and did some reshoots, definitely did some rewrites. There's a great show that's like dying to get out, but it's very, very flawed. I will say that the hype from Comic-Con, when some of the attendees got to see the pilot where they bashed it, I can see where they got their point. The first 30 minutes, and no spoilers right now, were cringeworthy. I watched it the first time. I half watched it as I was playing Portal 2. Shout outs to Valve. And I was picking up certain things, and I was just like, that don't make any sense. I don't like that. Why are they doing that? And then at the 37-minute mark, Jada Pinkett, who's been bashed mercifully, has hammered it up, and I agree. She does give me too much of an Eartha Kitt Catwoman vibe in her first two scenes. But that third scene, as to quote Michael Dean, he would say, my man, she went bananas and killed it. And I think there's a lot that they can go with this series. But that first pilot, it was cringeworthy.
I'm going to go to Sean Hill. You've seen this. What were your thoughts?
You know, of course, let me qualify myself. I'm the non-geek of the bunch. So starting out, I'm looking at it and I'm seeing the Bruce Wayne origin story again now, for probably the fifth time in 15 years. So not really excited about that. But the look of the show is really, really good. I will give them that. It looks like a movie. It doesn't look like a TV show. So I'm really impressed with the cinematography and the art direction. The first 30 minutes, though, I was doing a lot of eye rolling as they're introducing some of the characters who will become probably more important later on. I'm like, you know, oh, look, there's Penguin. Oh, look, there's what I'm assuming it will be Catwoman. Look, there's Alfred. You know, so that part I didn't really like. Once the story kind of kicked in, and I got to disagree with Ant on Jada Pinkett Smith. I thought she did what most great villains have to do, and they have to chew that scenery. They got to make themselves stand out from they got to be a polar opposite from the hero. Your villain can't be boring. Your villain has to be someone that you at least are interested in and want to see them on screen. I thought she did a good job. But the overall concept of the show, I don't get what they're trying to do or what they're trying to say. Obviously, it's not going to be Batman's story or Bruce Wayne's story. I'm assuming it's going to be James Gordon's story. So is his story enough to sustain a full show? Plot-wise, you take out the Batman elements, and it's essentially your standard, you know, corrupt police, dealing with the mob, dealing with this, dealing with that. There isn't enough to really differentiate itself from other cop shows other than the superhero, supervillain angle. But it even kind of looks like they're even downplaying that. So I don't really I will continue to watch it. I'll say that. I will, you know, watch a couple of episodes, see where they go, where they developed it. The ending, I did like the ending, kind of a cliffhanger there. But I just think they tried to introduce too many characters in this initial pilot. They probably should have spread them out a little bit. That would be my main complaint of it. But again, the look of the film – or sorry, the film. The look of the show is excellent. I will give them that.
All right. My quick takeaways. So going into this, I didn't want to love it. I just thought the whole premise would be sort of dumb. And as it begins, I kind of will co-sign with both you guys said, Sean and Ampu. It starts a little hokey a little bit. You know, it's kind of like I guess I was really confused on the tone and the direction of where they're kind of going here. And I was like, what is – you know, what's going on? Is this in the past? Is this in a present sort of tense? How deep into the comics is this? Is it serious? And it sort of skirts on a lot of those. But I will say this. All of the actors, in my opinion, Ben McKenzie, the guy playing James Gordon, I thought he was good. The guy playing Harvey Bullock, I liked him as well. And I'm going to stand up and cheer. Jada Pinkett, I thought she was dope. She brought, when she came on the screen, it just brought this, I don't know, it set the tone when she came on. She is
exactly
hamming it. She is very serious, or she's like the comic book part, but done that I want to watch her on there. Like, she brought sort of the menace to it a little bit. Like, you first see her character beating somebody with a bat or something. I was like, damn, and she was hard. She was dope. I was like, I don't know, her charisma and everything, it just jumped off the screen. I thought she was fabulous. Even she's, you know, kind of thrown in there a little bit. I loved it. Yes, it starts off, the show starts with the origin of Bruce Wayne. You see the shooting. The key thing that is very different here, and I sort of have a problem with it, but you guys see where they're going to go. The Selina Kyle Catwoman character is, you know, creeping around the city streets. For some reason, her character annoys the hell out of me. I don't know why. I just trying to make her too cutesy looking, and I just don't believe a child is running around doing this. But she is basically a witness to the murder of the Waynes, and she's hanging up, you know, on a rafter over there looking as this whole thing goes down, which is very different, right? And the other thing that seems very interesting, and I imagine this will play out later, is the guy who kills them, the Waynes, he seems to just like intentionally pause and sort of look at Bruce and doesn't shoot him. And you kind of, you see that his face, well, in terms, he's got a mask, but it's like, okay, they're trying to show us they're going to be playing this off somehow later. Obviously there's some reason this is not a random killing or whatever's going on. And that's a little different, right? I'm like, okay, this is going to be a story element.
Yeah, he's read the comics. He knows that guy's Bruce Wayne and going to be Batman when he gets
or something, right? I'm like, okay. Now, the child who plays the guy, I have no problem with him. I was like, you know what? Cool. And when he does his, and I was like, okay, I can go with that. You know, I checked. And when Gordon finally comes to the scene and little Bruce Wayne is over there, I like that scene when he goes up to him. The kid is terrified and blah, blah, blah. But I'm going to tell you one, the other standout part that was real dope to me. And I really wish the show was based on them. When my man Alfred came in, when he came over there and he came to get Bruce, he said, stand up straight. I was like, what the fuck? I was like, this Alfred ain't no fucking joke, yo. like he was obviously there's something with him where he was like, get your bitch ass up and get over here and let's go. You know, I was like, this is, I was like, I need to see what's going on with Alfred. Okay, so I'm gonna jump. That was a big spotlight for me. When you see Alfred and them later in the show, you can tell Alfred is not the, he is not the Alfred we've ever seen in the cinematic or TV verse before. He's an Alfred that ain't no joke. You know, he's not a little, you know, yes, sir. Well,
here comes Alfred right now.
Yeah, he's not the bitch kind of dude. There's obviously something going on with him where he's not, you know, he's not weak. And there's a, you know, there's a part toward the end, and Bruce is on the roof of the Wayne Manor like he about to jump. And Jim Gordon pulls up, and he sees a little boy up there. He's like, what is going on? And Alfred comes out the door. And James Gordon just points up like, yo, that little nigga is up on the roof. Alfred just looked, get down from there. I told you about getting. I was like, whoa. And he just gets down, you know, and he goes to sit down. He's like, what were you doing up there? And you can kind of see that Bruce is on some other shit. He's like, I was trying to conquer fear. You know, he's like, you can tell a little boy has changed. I want to see more of the Alfred and the little Bruce Wayne dude. I hope that they are more, they are very much a part of this story, because that was very interesting to me. I want to see that aspect. We've never really seen the Alfred that he may be some old Secret Service type dude or whatever he is, coaching this little boy, you know, and the boy is already kind of dark. I love that. I thought that was really good. Lastly, I would just say the way this show ended, I'm not going to spoil anything or talk about it. I was like, okay, I'm going to be watching this show. It has a high potential for me to really love this. They go a little dark. This is a very violent show. There was a lot of situations where I was like, okay, what channel does this come on anyway?
Fox.
I'm like, okay, Fox. You had the show I really loved last year, Gang Related. That sort of pushed in terms of violence what you can do. This show, I was like, man, if this was on TNT or one of those, they would have went way with it, and I would have loved it. But I was like, this could be very good. They got the actors here. And even the story started to ramp up to I was really into it. And the decisions that are made at the end of the show tells me this is not going to be just some weak-ass bullshit. There's some consequences, and psychologically, the situations that these characters are in, there's no easy answers to what's going on. I like that, right? It was a really gray sort of thing. So my last part I will say, I actually like this show. I will be watching the next one. It can hopefully only get better. So it was way better than I expected it to be, if that says anything.
Question for you. Did you have a problem with them trying to squeeze too many of the secondary characters into the pilot?
The way that they use, and I'll just give it out, the Penguin, I actually ended up liking that. I was like, you know what? I didn't know where. Just seeing the commercials and seeing how, I just think, it's stupid. But I like how they did him in that. And I was like, okay. I don't know how it plays in the further
that one
pantheon.
I didn't have a problem with. Yeah, I didn't have a problem with that one. But I'll go ahead. It was Enigma. It was Ivy. Yeah, it was all of these. Other
I didn't
ones.
Catch the Ivy one, but the Enigma dude. Yeah, that was. I was like, yeah, really.
You didn't, do you remember which one Ivy is?
No, not I'm thinking.
She's the daughter of the guy that got killed. She answers the door, and he says,
"Oh, really?
Yeah, remember they had they were all the plants on the inside of the apartment.
Yeah. Went right over my head. Yeah, now that you say that,
that was.
Yeah, that was
it. Well, as long as they don't introduce a teenage Joker, I'm going to be okay with it.
That was really my only problem is that, and especially after I've read that they've got a 16 episode commitment from Fox, so they could have spread that out. They didn't have to. It's not like this is a pilot. We're going to give you everything we got right now because we don't know if we're going to get picked up. They were picked up when the show went into production, so. Spread those out. You know,
see how if he's used a lot in the show or not, the different things. Yeah, the whole Catwoman thing was just pushing my face too much. The other one, Ivy. So for me, I didn't even see that. Like, I didn't even catch it.
Because I was like, oh, Lord, another one?
It's like, yeah, there's a lot.
It's now like, There's now four secondary characters that they're now introducing in this one episode.
Damn, I'm really shocked. I must be very cynical. I thought for sure everybody would agree with my assessment on the show. I really liked it.
Well, like I said, I came into it, didn't think I would, and it just exceeded my expectations. I was like, I kind of dig this.
I didn't say I didn't like it. I just think that for what it is, again, we just ended a Batman series. So it's almost like, I mean, I know this isn't a Batman series, but we're now entering the same universe again, and now we're getting yet a third retelling since basically 1989, you know, cinematically wise or TV wise. So now we're getting yet another go at it. It almost seems like, why is the show even being made? What is the purpose of it, other than comic books are hot right now and we got to keep milking the money train?
And that's the problem I kind of have with the narrative of the story, where they're not really sure what are they focusing on. What is the tone of the television? Do you want to go into any spoilers or put a spoiler alert?
I like a spoiler. I like when they in the beginning, where they get the guy in the police station, he grabs the cop up, and you know, Jim Gordon disarms him, and then the cops whip his ass. I'm okay with that.
I was gonna say, it's a dark show. I appreciate that. I appreciate that.
I would be the same way. I have no problem with that.
Yeah, essentially, this is a cop show where you got the hero goody cop, and it's a corrupt police force. And he has to, you know, how does he survive in a corrupt situation where he can't just be the bad, he can't be the good guy. He's going to have to get dirty. That's essentially what it is.
Yeah, but we've seen that before. That's what I'm saying, too, right. As far as.
And the key difference is it has these, you know, it's in the superhero universe, basically.
Yeah. Go ahead, Ann, sorry.
What I found funny is the line where he said is, you take a cop's gun, you get shot. And I was just like, yeah, there's some social messaging there. But the thing that I found kind of hard to keep up with, well, I wouldn't say hard to keep up with, but it found me like, okay, where are you going with this? Is you have the three swerves of Harvey Bullock, where you think that he's the corrupt cop, then he's the cop with a heart, then they make you think that he's corrupt all along, then he ends up there trying to save Jim Gordon. Then at the end, he takes another swerve. I'm just like, okay, Mark, you'll get this reference. It's like, is Vince Russo writing this? There's too many damn swerves going on here. you'll see what I'm saying when you see the episode. It's like, okay, what is Harvey Bullock's character and motive? We get by the end. It's like, look, I'm doing whatever it got to take to survive. But for me, I'm thinking, well, why don't you just leave the city? Is Gotham the only city in this world? You can go somewhere else. But, I mean, that's a small nitpick. But
Says why he's there, Jim Gordon, if that's what you mean.
No. Not Jim Gordon. I'm sorry. Bullock.
Oh, well, shit. He's a corrupt dude. He wants to be in the dirt, I think. I mean, just seems obvious. Like, that's this is great to him.
Scared. But he seems scared, too. Like, I got to do what I got to do to survive. I'm like, well, leave the city.
Yeah, I don't know. I get that he's the kind of guy that, again, he doesn't want Jim Gordon to be his partner either, because he wants to continue on as things are. Like, he's the man in them streets, as long as he, you know what I mean? Because he knows how to, look how he came up to Fish Mooney. I was like, they was fucking or something. I was like, damn, y'all kissing and stuff. Like, okay.
Well, and since we're kind of doing a little bit of spoiler, I'll talk about the ending as spoiler free as I can. Not the actual ending, but the scene at the dock. As soon as Bullock gives him that order, I knew exactly what was going to happen.
Yeah,
and I'm like, why do? And this is a movie and film writing and mistake that people make in real life. If you're going to have someone do what he's asking him to do, you would watch to make sure that it got done. You wouldn't say, okay, go over there and do it, and I'm going to trust you that it's been done. One or two things they should have. Had another character that would have been getting rid of, or he should have actually shot him, and then he just, for some reason, he survives. I just thought the whole intentional miss was a bit corny.
Well, you know what? My defense to that, though, is to say, so we know what he was going to do. because you know this is a TV show, and he's the lead character, and the character that he's with is one of the pantheon of characters that must survive. Right,
right, right.
But even though I knew what was going to happen, I liked it because, again, I understand, like, you know what? This is, I know in the realm of what it has to deal with. I understand story, like, they're going to do this in the story. It's just it's a thing that is done. But I didn't have any problem with it. It didn't seem cheesy to me. I can see what you're saying, but I just think in terms of story, if you do the thing that's the smart thing, you don't have a story. Like, if you go in and see who the killer is, then the movie's going to be over in the first 10 minutes. I just feel like it put him in a position where he's dirty. Whether he did it or not, he understands that it's not going to be easy. Like, he's not going to just come in here and be the hero and save the shit. That part where he did that was a major thing. And when he talked to, was it Falcone or whatever?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He was that character that came in and just basically said, listen, this is how the things are. You're going to either get on or get rolled over. It's bigger than you.
Boss Falcone is in this? Cool.
Yeah, it's like, he's bigger than you. This is the situation, blah, blah, blah. And we've seen this in shows before, but I liked it. I was like, okay, this when I started to realize this is what this show is probably going to be about. Like, yeah.
Well,
you know, he's a corrupt system, and he's got to try to figure out a corrupt system, and he may have to get corrupt. And when I lastly, I'll just say, when you think about Batman, what does Batman do, at least in the cinematic universe, for instance? The shit doesn't change until Batman comes in because he isn't tied to anybody, so he can get out there and fight the bad, whereas they've even shown you now, his wife or his girlfriend, future wife, is in danger if he does anything. So he has that against him. No matter what he does, he ain't going to really be able to go hard because they're going to kill that lady. So they set that up early, let you know, like, his hands are tied. I don't know how this will play out over seasons if Batman never shows up. When does he ever not untie his hands? But I wasn't mad at that, I was saying.
I mean, I wasn't mad at per se. It just it would have been way more interesting if, let's substitute that character for another one of Fish's henchmen, and then he actually pulls the trigger, you know, for real. That would have made the stakes higher,
sure.
and made it more interesting and made it more in depth. I just think that particular setup, which, you know, we've seen in a, you know, trillion other movies, was a bit of a cop out because we, as you said, we as the audience know that this has got to happen because X, Y, and Z are going to happen in the future. So,
right. The whole tone of the show is a problem because it's like doing the prequels. Like you said, we know how the story ends. So you going back and showing us a prequel is going to be limited because, again, he's in no peril at any point in any of these seasons because he can't die.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So that's what I'm saying. Make that character another character to...
Who's the blonde that Jim Gordon was just macking on in the apartment?
That's his wife or future.
Damn, go ahead, player.
Okay, my thing is, and we'll go into the scene that I really enjoyed with Jada Pinkett when to me we kind of turned. That was the point in the show where I turned. It was like, wow, okay, this is getting good. That the scene in the bar where that comedian is auditioning for her, and
can I ask a question real quick? Is that supposed to be the Joker?
I'm better not be.
I don't think so.
They don't. If it is, it's so like random.
He's telling jokes, and at that point, we had already kind of introduced a lot of other, you know. So
unless he ends up becoming a different character in the show and gets into crime, right now, I don't think he's anybody now.
Isn't the Riddler a character?
I think that at all.
Isn't the Riddler character, though? Would it be the Riddler?
No, they show the Riddler earlier.
The Riddler's in there. Yeah, they show him.
He's actually a police officer.
Maybe it could be what's the guy that played Clayface?
The actor?
That actor guy. I forgot.
Well, go ahead and say what you're going to say.
Yeah, that scene was freaking – that was awesome. When she just flipped on the dime and when Bullock was like, look, you can't do this because of this. And if you do, then I might have to come after you. And she's like, okay. And then she puts her man on the phone. He was like, take him out. Yep. Take him out.
Yeah, that was dope.
And then
that was some Michael Corleone.
And then she put the work in on Oswald. I was like, oh, man. I don't want to spoil that. But that scene is like, okay, I understand you have your Riddler, you have your Penguin, you have your Carmine, but that scene right there, you need to be giving us more Fish Mahoney.
Exactly. I think that's the saving grace.
That was it.
She can get in the thick of everything because she's not obviously not a character in the books. So if she doesn't make it, at least they're going to give us a great story with her if they choose to really let her do her thing. So quickly, last quick 10-second impressions for the listeners. Ampu.
Fire that child actor. He's horrible. Oh, okay. They keep him. It's the equivalent of Jake Lloyd and Star Wars.
Wow.
And
wow, no. All right. That's your opinion. Sean Hill.
Thumbs up. Some reservations. I want to see how they develop the show and where they're going to take these different characters.
All right. Lastly, better than I expected. Very interested to watch more. I will be there for the second episode. There you go. All right. So there we go. Gotham. Moving on from that, let's talk about some movies. There's a couple of movies come out this week. One was The Maze Runner, which we'll talk about. And the other was a movie that I wasn't too aware of. Is this the one that's Liam Neeson?
Liam Neeson, yes.
Liam Neeson. So go ahead and give us the title of that and give us a little your input on that.
All right. The title of it is A Walk Among the Tombstones, which I actually think is a bad title, but it's a bad title for an excellent 4-star movie. Essentially, Liam Neeson, who is – I called him in my review. He's become a poor man's Harrison Ford, and I don't mean that as an insult by any means. He is – it's amazing how he's kind of morphed from this, you know, classically trained actor to action hero. But in this one, he plays a former NYPD cop. He's turned private investigator. As with most movie cops, he's an alcoholic. He has an event in his past that has shaped him to be who he is today. He is at a diner when he meets one of his fellow AA members, and the guy wants him to do a job for his brother. And the brother is a drug dealer. Whose wife has been kidnapped and subsequently killed. Initially, he doesn't want to take the job because he doesn't want to work for a drug dealer, but his friend convinced him to do it. Unfortunately, the trailer cuts this movie as an action film, and it is not an action film whatsoever. It owes a little bit more to those hard-boiled movies, detective movies of the 70s, you know, the Mickey Spillane's, the Jack Hammer, that kind of thing. Basically, the film is just him investigating and trying to figure out what happens. The thing that I really, really liked about it is its pacing. It's a slow moving film, but I've said this before. A lot of times people – and we're living in an age where we want things quickly. We want, okay, we got to have an action scene every 5 minutes. This one is more about character than about what happens. The most interesting aspect of it is that he meets this little, I think it's maybe 13 or 14 year old boy, little black kid, and he kind of develops a little surrogate relationship with this kid. This kid's basically he follows him around. He's like his little junior partner, but of course Neeson doesn't want him to be around, but he finds him helpful. As the film progressed, I became kind of less involved with the plot of the movie, which I really haven't talked about that much. I was more involved with the characters. By the time the movie reached this inevitable blood-soaked conclusion, it's basically a tale of redemption, not action. I've given it 4 out of 4 stars. So if you're in the mood for a movie that you think you're going in, you're just going to see people, shooting, killing each other, stuff blowing up. That's not the case. So I highly, highly recommend this film. It's a great movie.
All right. I think I will check that out. Now, this is not like a Taken knockoff type of movie.
No. I actually watched – I don't watch trailers. I think I've said this before. I don't watch trailers typically before I go in because I want to go in blind. So I watched the trailer after I saw the movie, and I was like, well, wow, they're making it look like it take. I mean, they even got the shot of him on the phone, I'm coming after you, that kind of thing. And it is so the polar opposite of Taken that I wish studios would have the guts to promote the films based on what they're about, not based on what people are expecting to see. Because people are going to go see this film, and they're going to be thinking it's a Taken. And because it's so slow moving, and they're not going to be getting involved with it because it requires them to think, a lot of people are going to be turned off by it. But, of course, me, not the case at all. It's also on my list of the best films of the year so far. So that's wow. That's how much I liked it.
All right. So the other big release this week was The Maze Runner. And this is – so on the surface, this movie is sort of thrown in that Twilight, Hunger Games sort of genre. You know, young adult. It's based on a young adult novel, sort of dystopia, future type of a setting. So I have that in my head as I go to see this. And some of those movies are sort of cringeworthy.
Hey, Mike.
Yes,
Mike.
Sir. Go ahead.
Dystopian.
we correct each other when we F up. So anyway, getting into this. So I had all that in my mind as I went to go see this movie. What is this movie about? This movie is about a young man. I'm not going to spoil this movie. This movie is about a young man. He is in like a cage elevator or something, and he's, you know, knocked out, and he regains consciousness as he is arising up this elevator, and it's dark, and the ceiling opens up, and he is surrounded by these other young boys, and he is in some sort of forest type area, and you just see these huge walls around him. He does not remember his name. He remembers nothing of who he is. And, you know, he's coming up and you just hear people saying, "Oh, we got a new one." You know, they call him Greeny. You know, he's the new kid. And as he sort of gains his consciousness, you start to get the sort of the rules of what's going on in your environment. And this is a black kid. I don't know his name. He was great in this movie. And I will say this, everyone in this movie was great. But the kid is the leader of this group, and he's telling them, "Hey, you know, every month somebody comes out. You are the one that comes out this time, and we also get supplies, and hence the boxes and things that are around you. And we're sort of broken into little fractions in here, and everyone has a job. You're not going to remember who you are for a couple of days, but probably the first thing that will come to you will be your name, and you kind of slowly will pick up things maybe." And, you know, the guy's like, you can work over here, or you can help over here with these other kids. But we are sort of a tight knit family, and, you know, welcome, blah, blah, blah. And he notices that there's huge walls, you know, that go way up into the sky. And it's kind of like, you know, what's going on? And he sees these guys sort of running out to the wall area, and you can see where it's open. He's like, "Well, what's over there?" And he's like, "Oh, we don't go in there. You don't worry about that. We don't go in there." And you see some guys coming out of there. Like, "Oh, how come they got to go in there?" "Oh, well, those dudes are runners. You know, they don't worry about that." And through the course of this, things are starting to be revealed. And, of course, his temptation for him, he wants to go run out there and see what's going on as well. He's trying to understand, why does everyone seem to be scared to go out there? And you start hearing little things. And it's like, "Well, what is that noise?" And somebody will say something that just piques your curiosity of, "Wait, you just mentioned something I don't understand. What's a griever, or what is this?" And so it slowly starts to, you know, like, you know what? You can't go out there because it's dangerous, and only a runner can go out there, and those walls at night will close like clockwork. And if you don't make it back, your ass is stuck out there, and no one has ever been stuck out there and came back alive. So you don't want to go out there. The point in the movie that happens is the leader guy, that's the black dude, he's out there. He had went out early in the morning with another runner, and they've been running around doing whatever they do. And it's getting late, and everyone's like, "Man, they haven't made it back yet. Oh, they're always going to make it back, you know." And it's still getting late, and like, you know, they know those walls about to close. So they're all kind of standing there, and it's getting dark. And I'm like, "Yo, they're not coming back. What's going on?" And the doors are starting to close. And then, sure enough, you see them come running around the corner way up in there. Like, "Oh, shit, there they are." And one of the dudes is carrying the black dude like he's knocked out unconscious. And it's like, "Man, I don't know if they're going to make it because the doors is closing. These are big, giant walls, right?" So our lead character, you can tell he's sort of fighting, like he wants, how come we can't just go over there and help him? Everybody's scared shitless to go in there. So he darts in there just as the doors are closing. And of course, there's no way he's going to come back out because it's just too tight and it shuts. Boom. And he's stuck in there with one kid unconscious and then the other dude. And it looked like they've been through hell. And I'm going to stop talking about it here. I would just say that madness ensues once we, the viewer, have the opportunity. Now we get to see what is going on in there. And there are things that can happen. There's these creatures, I'm going to say, that you're either going to say, you know what, this is ridiculous. What is this? Or for me, I was like, yo, I'm scared shitless. What the fuck is this? Nigga, run. And the adventure element of this is excellent. It goes into, I was, remember in Star Wars, I'm going to go back to Star Wars. You know, when they go into the trash compactor, you know, the walls are closing. Just get on top of them. You know, as a kid watching it, I was like, whoa, I'm breathing hard. This is amazing. You know, this is very tense. This movie is that. All of it plays like that because it plays on, you know, walls closing in or something closing, or you're being chased and you have to leap and jump and climb. You know, it gets into sort of a video game. You got to run and jump, you know, pitfall and all that. And it plays on that perfectly. And so I was blown away by that. I was like, this shit is tense. I'm like, this is cool. And it's action, you know. And then there's the reveal part, which was a cool reveal. It's nothing like the Matrix where your head is blown open reveal, but it was enough to say like, yo, this was cool. This is something I had no idea what was going to happen. I've never read the book. So it was original to me and I really liked it. And somebody else comes up through the bottom of that thing and more things are revealed. You know, like, this is a cool movie. So my review of this is to say, I really enjoyed this movie. It was original to me. And that's something I don't really get to see very often. I didn't know how it was going to end. I liked the ending enough that I immediately left the theater, went to Barnes and Noble's, and got the second book because I was like, that shit was pretty good. I got to know what, and it tells you in the movie what they're about to get into in the next movie. I will say this. You remember those movies called The Cube?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It was like, it reminded me of that in terms of the theme. Like, this is obviously a very bigger budget and bigger movie, but it was like that. And it was like, there's another Cube movie. I went and watched the other ones. I just thought they were sort of clever and I liked the adventure of it. And it doesn't play on the, here's the differentiation between this and all those other ones. It's not a love story. There is a woman that is introduced in this movie, but it is not played for the love theme or any of that, and it doesn't slow down at all. This is a dark movie. It's a great adventure. Cats is getting killed and it's going down. They have this stereotypical type of sort of bad guy character a little bit. You know, there's this type of kid and there's that kind of kid. Worked perfectly. There was last thing I'll say, why I love this, because I'm a sucker for this, there was heroism in this movie. Like, motherfuckers was heroes and they was ready to sacrifice so the next guy could get through or something. I like that kind of shit. And then they were kids doing it. All the actors were brilliant. I don't know who they were. I had never seen none of them in nothing before. I was like, I like this. This is solid. This was just a solid movie. It ain't got to be the best movie of all time or the best action of the year. It was just a solid adventure. I'm ready for the next one. So I like The Maze Runner. I say go see it for yourself. It's actually very good. It is nothing like those other movies, actually.
Sometimes, at least for me as a critic, I have to make choices when the studios screen things at the same time. You know, you got to just pick which one you want to go see. So I had a choice going to see Tusk or going to see The Maze Runner. I, unfortunately, unwisely, stupidly chose Tusk over The Maze Runner. And hearing your superlatives, I now – I want to just go cry in my beer. I cannot believe that.
Yeah, let's say the thing is, though, it is no shame on you or anybody who didn't go to see, because, again, based off of everything that we would think this would be and the movies that have come before this, you probably would make the right choice by doing that, because you would just think, I don't, I've seen this before. And so that's why I say going into it, I thought probably like you did. Those other movies just didn't interest me, and I didn't even know they were out. So that's why I went to go see. I was like, it looks like it might be kind of okay. It was actually, it exceeded my expectations. It's like, this is good. I can see how kids, again, younger kids, the me at 16 in high school, I would eat this shit up. Like, ugh, this is everything I've always loved the movie. So, yeah.
And I don't want to take a lot of valuable airtime for this, but I just want to give a PSA to our listeners. If you have a friend or a cousin, boyfriend, girlfriend that even suggests that you go see Tusk, well, I can't say slap them because now we're in the domestic violence. Just politely walk away and say no thank you and skip it. You will thank me later.
That's all I got. Tusk is a Kevin Smith movie, right? Kevin Smith?
Yes. It is the worst. Not only is Kevin Smith's worst movie by far, I mean, it's the worst movie that I've probably seen in the last 5 years. This is no hyperbole. I got home from the screening. I literally wanted to hang up my lighted pen. I wanted to shred my notepad. And I seriously contemplated deleting my Hill Street Views blog off the face of the interweb. It was that bad.
What was so bad about it, man?
It was a poorly executed idea. The film basically came about because his Twitter followers asked him to make it.
Let me read this real quick, because I'm going to ask you this, because looking at this synopsis, I kind of want to see it. I'm going to tell you why. It says Tusk. It says a chilling horror tale about the perils of storytelling. This film follows a brash American podcaster as he braves the Canadian wilds to interview an old man with an incredible past, only to discover the man's dark secret involves a walrus. And it says comedy/horror. But just because I saw the podcaster part, I'm like, whoa, what is this?
Yeah, the character is a podcaster, because it's based off of Kevin Smith's podcast. But they call it a comedy. It's not funny. I didn't laugh once. It's nothing like his usual, I'm expecting something like, Clerks, Mallrats, JSL and Bob Strike Back. It's more like Red State, where it's definitely he's trying to make a serious horror film, and again, it just fails miserably. There isn't a moment in the film where I was ever involved. And again, it's a stupid idea for a movie. A man is turned into a walrus because another man is obsessed with walruses. That is what the movie is about. They were probably high on their podcast and got to talking about it, and then Kevin Smith posted, okay, do you want us to make this movie? Walrus yes, or hashtag walrus no. And so I guess the hashtag walrus yes won, and he made the movie.
See, I don't know if you're familiar with I think it's Kafka. The short story. Well, I don't know if it's a short story, but the story he wrote called I think it's called Metamorphosis, where a man turns into a cockroach, and it's very existential. And to me, having read that, I've read it in high school. I don't remember much about it, but that's what makes me want to see this movie. Although it did get mostly negative reviews, but there, I mean, it sounds gory. It sounds like the Human Centipede to me. But I have to agree with Mike. I'm curious to see. Hopefully there is a psychological element. It's like a psychological horror type of thing where how do you deal with your identity being taken away from you in such a manner?
Well, I'm looking at Rotten Tomatoes, and I'm just kind of like, well, what are people saying about this? I'm seeing the word cornball. I'm seeing it says, if you are a Kevin Smith fan, a junkie as I am, you'll appreciate the verbal pinwheels he spins around the horror genre. So no. I'd imagine this is obviously like very Kevin Smith-esque sort of a...
No.
He says, it's no.
Not. Mm. No. The film, it unsuccessfully, in my opinion, rips off everything from Jaws to Misery, Silence of the Lambs, Frankenstein, Castaway, and The Fly. it's almost like a shuffle of those movies, different elements. The only saving grace, and this is somewhat of a spoiler, is Johnny Depp is in it, and he's unrecognizable, but he's in full Johnny Depp mode as well. So, you know, you got to kind of take that with a grain of salt. It's poorly written. It's poorly directed. It's cheap looking. They said the budget was like $2.9 million for it. I would probably say they spent at least $1 million of it on weed and Doritos. I mean, there's no way that there's $2.9 million worth of budget on that screen. You know, hey, everybody has their own opinion, though. If you want to go see it, bless your heart, go ahead and do so. But I gave it 0 stars. It will be the worst film of 2014. If I see a film worse than this, I probably will hang up Hill Street Views and go sell cars or something. Because maybe I'm just in the wrong line of work.
All right. Yeah, I have to catch that on Netflix or something. I won't pay.
I mean, if it was a comedy, I must have missed the joke. That's all I got to say. I kept waiting for Jay and Silent Bob to pop up and, you know, Snoochie Noochie, bitches. You know, this is a joke. You know, what are you doing sitting here? I would have given it 4 stars if they would have done that. But there's nothing existential about it. There's nothing thought provoking about it. There's nothing interesting about it. Once he becomes the Walrus, the rest of the film is him moaning and groaning, literally. There's no internal dialogue. You know, if we got to hear his thoughts, that would be kind of cool because you get to hear what's going on inside. You get to listen to a guy for almost 45 minutes going, ooh. That's it.
Did they at least license the I Am the Walrus song from the Beatles?
No, I don't even think there's any music in the, which Lame. That's nothing. Kevin Smith usually puts music in his films. And
what does the costume look like?
It is unbelievably cheap. You can actually see it, like you can see the folds and the holes in it where I guess, you know, he was kind of moving around a lot, and you can see where it's starting to come apart, and you could tell that it's like flimsy plastic looking. It is, and I tried to get pictures of all of this. I tried to get a picture of Johnny Depp, and I tried to get a picture of him in the costume. And studios not putting any of that out at all.
Let me ask you this: it sounds like this movie requires you to come in with a bag of ganja with you, because
a reviewer friend actually said that to me. He said, "You know, this movie might be enjoyable high." And I said, "Well, I don't know because I don't have that frame of reference, but maybe."
All right.
It sounds like I want to go see how they pull it off visually, if nothing else. I mean, it's kind of like the Human Centipede series. I haven't seen the second one. I've been hesitant to watch it because I hear so many disgusting things about it. But I'm not going to lie. It fascinates me that someone put that on film, and that makes me want to kind of see this.
All right.
I'm kind of a fan of Justin Long, to be honest. I know he's not well-liked, but...
What else has he done?
He was in Die Hard 4.
Yeah.
Die Hard. He was 3 years ago, he played the Mac guy on the Mac versus PC commercials. He was in Drag Me to Hell, Sam Raimi's horror film.
It's kind of like a poor man's...
He's kind of like a poor man's David Schwimmer.
I was going to say the guy from the Transformers.
Nah.
Shia LaBeouf.
I think he's far more talented than Shia LaBeouf. Oh, he played in Jeepers Creepers. Did you see that?
That's old school. I've never seen that. I know who you're talking about. Yeah, he's all right. Well, all right.
Like I said, guys, yeah, it's up to you guys. I just write the reviews and give my opinion.
All right, let's get into some movie news. Of course, we have to do our weekly Batman vs. Superman update.
What happened to the quiz, pop quiz?
No quiz this week, sorry. We did a quiz.
Am I getting jacked out there?
Yeah, I don't know. It's what's going on out there in the hood. I'm in a Mexican hood. It's going down.
Repo, all right.
Man. All right. So let's see. Our new scoop for Batman vs. Superman is about Aquaman. Now the spoiler sort of talk rumor is that you remember in Man of Steel, remember the scene at the oil rig, and Clark is blasted into the water and he loses consciousness. And he's floating. Well, in that scene, there were the whales that we see. It is now being sort of said that those whales were under the control of Aquaman. And because we never see how he gets to the surface or gets back onto the beach or whatever. So I guess they may be going back and showing that, you know what, it was Aquaman who actually went and sort of sent those whales to get Clark. So, there you go.
Here's a thought. He's Superman. Isn't that good enough?
Well, Superman does have to breathe, though, doesn't he?
Not necessarily.
Well, he flies in space. Well, he doesn't.
There's no air. There's no air. But I'm not arguing you. You're correct. I'm just saying what they're saying.
Man, listen. You giving Zack Snyder way too much credit to have thought that all the way through.
Very true. I agree.
I'm just saying.
This scoop or whatever is coming from a guy. His name is Jeff Sneeder. He's from the show called The Wrap, which I don't know if this is an online thing. He says he was at, was it Toronto? The Toronto Film Festival, I believe. And this is what he overheard some of the bigwigs saying about the movie. So take it with a grain of salt. So yeah, that's our weekly Batman versus Superman update. I don't know if you guys have seen, there's more footage of the Batmobile, in action in the streets. I think it's in Detroit they're filming. And now they show there's some big explosions they've been doing yesterday. So just keeping you up on it. There we go. All right, next one is on the Deadpool movie. So Fox has announced that they are pushing forward with making a Deadpool movie. They haven't officially announced that Ryan, what's this guy's name?
Ryan Reynolds.
Reynolds is going to be playing the character, but it's a pretty safe bet that he will be. And the word is that this whole sort of about face and push happened because of the leaked footage that had leaked a month ago or so online, and such a good buzz about that they're saying, hey, you know what? We're going to do this movie. I'm seeing today, though, cause somewhat of concern that this movie will be PG-13 and not R-rated.
I'm sick of Deadpool. What? I never liked the character. I only thought he was cool on the cover of New Mutants 98, which was his first appearance. Once the Life Field deal ended with Marvel, this whole merc with the mouth, I'm sick of it. I'm sick of how they shove him down our throats on all these variants they did a couple of years ago. I just do not like that character. I don't give a damn about this movie.
Did you see the test footage?
I didn't see any of it.
See that and then see if it changes your mind, because that was for, I'm not the biggest Deadpool fan. I've never been a big Deadpool fan, but that test footage was freaking awesome. And I'm like, if the whole film has that tone, they can have their Guardians of the Galaxy, in my opinion.
What?
Yeah.
I enjoyed the test footage, too.
Yeah.
Anybody else have a comment on this?
I'm not that familiar with the character, to be honest. I mean, but I have been watching Arrow. Just trying to catch up on that. I'm probably on episode 7 of the first season. And they've just introduced Deathstrike, is that his name?
Deathstroke.
Yeah. And so far, I have to say, if I had to choose between characters, I'm going with Deathstroke, just based on what I've seen. But they're both kind of like analogs of each other, right?
No.
That's what I've been told. That's what
maybe in the beginning, but not anymore.
Yeah. Deathpool is very wisecracking. He seems an unkillable maniac. Is he a mutant or something? Like, what is
he? He's a mutant.
I've seen his head chopped off. He's still going and puts it back together, and he's all over the place.
What is his power?
Apparently, his power is whipping somebody's ass in an Escalade. That's what he's doing.
Well, what does he do? What makes him a mutant?
A healing factor and heightened senses. Wolverine light.
So he's basically Spider-Man and Wolverine.
And he's very resilient because he's taking, like, 10 elbows to the face and still talking.
Yeah, in the movie universe, he was he was introduced in the Wolverine movie. That I didn't really care. Well, when they show him at first, and Ryan Reynolds is playing him before he actually becomes Deadpool, I could kind of see like this guy would be that. But when he actually at the end of the movie with the big showdown, he was ridiculous. Yeah, that was just totally ridiculous, dumb.
And what was ridiculous about it?
He was not the character of Deadpool. He was just some mindless killer. I mean, he had no personality, which is a big part of the Deadpool character. He didn't even speak.
Well, okay, so maybe you're going to pull my geek card, but why are people saying that? What makes people think that was supposed to be Deadpool he was portraying?
Because it was the character. That was Wade Wilson, and he had the classic face makeup with the black paint around his eyes.
Ah, is that why people hated? I'll say it here. People, it seems like the majority of the public hated X-Men Origin Wolverine.
I liked it.
And I'm wondering, to me, I walked out of that movie with the same type of reaction that I walked away with most of the X-Men films. I'm wondering, is that why people loathed this movie so much? Because of that character?
That, and it was a bad movie.
What was so bad? Okay, that's not what we're talking about here. I just don't get why was that so bad. As opposed to any of the
dude came with this is straight from the film. He came with, well, I have an adamantium bullet that we don't know if that'll kill him. Well, he'll definitely lose his memories. The fuck? Come on. It was like it was just so blatantly obvious that everything that they were doing, they had to, well, we have to be here because this is the prequel.
See, like that's been the case with all the X-Men movies. They've always fudged things as a means to meet an end or a means to an end.
Well, that was far worse. That was second far worse. I mean, X-Men 3 was much worse, but that was bad. It was a bad movie.
Okay.
Let's get into another one here. So Idris Elba, he recently did a Reddit interview and he talked about him playing Luke Cage or not. But he said this. He says, somebody asked him, you know, are you going to play Luke Cage? Because apparently he had talked about this earlier on. This was before Thor. When he said, I think there's an actor already signed for it. Unfortunately. So he is not going to play that character, which would lead me to think that there's no way he could play that character anyway. Because unfortunately, dumbly, I think, Marvel has him playing the guy out of Thor, you know, sort of side, not even a side character. So that you have this great actor now that can't be he can't be Black Panther, he can't be Luke Cage, he can't be anybody else in the Marvel Cinematic Universe because you already got him as this little sideline.
I disagree. Captain America play Johnny Storm too?
I'm talking about in the same universe, like he's already a character in their movies.
I think they can. They can just recast Heimdall and bump Idris up to something more prominent. I mean, right now they don't have he couldn't be Black Panther. I don't think he'd fit as Black Panther in my opinion.
I agree.
But I don't think he'd fit as Luke Cage. So, but I'm just saying, I think they can just recast Heimdall and say Idris is playing this character now.
Yeah, it would be a first.
It's never been done before, I don't think, but why not?
They could do like George Lucas, just recast him, go back in the video DVD, take his face out, put somebody else's face on there, and move it on.
But I have a question though. Why do we act like there are only like three black actors in the universe? Why is he even being considered? I agree that I don't.
Well, I'm saying because he talked about it. He had mentioned this before he did Thor, so that's why we're talking about it.
Yeah,
I've heard online people saying he should play Green Lantern, and
that's the only role I would suggest him for too.
Say what?
Stewart. That's the only role I would suggest him for is John Stewart.
I just don't see him playing any of those roles. I mean, just me personally. He's 42. I know Robert Downey Jr. is in his mid 40s, but. I don't know, it just seems like he's a little bit too old to take one of these roles.
Yeah, I don't see his age being an issue, but I think he's a great actor. I could see him in any of these roles. I think he's being underused as Heimdall, or what is his character?
Heimdall.
Yeah, I would imagine they could have really had him be something a lot better, bigger than this. Maybe they just didn't anticipate his star rising or whatever, but he's a great actor. He's a sideline character.
Now, in your opinion, with No Good Deeds being number one at the box office, do you think that helps him?
Oh, I'm sure in terms of box office, yeah, it's always going to help if you're number one. He's not terrible in that movie. It's just the movie's terrible.
That means nothing.
You don't think it means anything if you're number one?
No. The film opened with no competition, so basically it was going to be number one regardless because it didn't open up against anything else. Now, I would be more impressed if it opened against, say, I don't know, Guardians, and it was number one then. Yeah, you'd have something to talk about. But
now, you're saying you think the industry thinks it means nothing?
Yes.
The industry knows that the film did not open against anything. The industry knows that the studio canceled screenings because they were afraid of what people were going to say about it and didn't give reviewers a chance to review it. The fact that it opened number one means nothing because it did not open against anything. There was no other options for movies for people to go see.
I would say it means something. I mean everything, but you know the whole reason they released those lists are for consumers, right? So the fact that they tell you that it's number one is not for no reason. They know that you think. I'm not saying you, but. You know, the movie-going audience thinks it matters. And so for them, it has to play in what they – because they understand the consumer thinks it matters. Like, oh, he's big. Like, they think he's – if we're going to promote it like he's big, then, of course, it means something. Like, your reasons, what you said, are absolutely correct. I'm not dissuading you. I'm just saying it does mean something. It means something for what's the girl who plays
it
in
it?
Well, it does to the consumer for a little bit because consumers will go see what's on the top of the list. They're going to see what, even if it's not a good movie, it matters because some people are making a decision saying, hey, you know what? That No Good Deeds is number one. Oh, let's go see that. It must be okay. And it's still, the movie's horrible. True. Well, there are other movies to see. There's not as many top tier movies that are out. Let's be clear, but it does matter.
Well, it's
not saying, I'm not saying the movie is number one because it is a great movie. For the merits of how it normally and does the marketplace make it seem number one? Yes, but it's to say that it doesn't matter. I'm not saying. I'm just saying there's no way it does not matter at all.
It's funny bringing that up because a friend of mine posted on Facebook to my wall say, "Hey, you know, No Good Deed's number one. What do you think about that?" And I said exactly what I just said.
But see, they said that. That's what I'm saying. So it matters to them.
I know, but the response was, well, man, why you got to be negative? I'm like, I'm not being negative. Those are the facts. You asked me a question. I answered your question. That's why it's number one is because of A, B, and C.
Right, and I agree with you. The reasons why it make perfect sense, but I'm just saying in terms of a consumer mindset, how it's based on charts, obviously they would never ask that question if it wasn't. That's what I'm saying. So it does sort of matter. Their reasoning is flawed, but that's why it matters to some degree.
It proves that he can... It proves he can open a movie. I mean, without a doubt. But
Sean,
yes,
I'm just gonna say, don't listen to him. Together, we can rule podcast juice.
Absolute power.
I love how Q is like kind of taking me under his wing,
trying to pull you over to the dark side.
I'm just saying, if I have nothing else, it's like a track race, right? If there's one runner in the race, does it really matter? Yeah, he won. Well, he was the only one competing.
But see, the thing is, he's not the only one competing, right?
Who else? Well, Sean just said there's nothing else to open that weekend.
Well, again, that would mean that Guardians of the Galaxy's continuous success means nothing because there was nothing else for that to compete with. It still matters. It may not be the reasons we want it to be, but there's no reason. There's a reason why they keep reporting these charts because it does matter to the consumer. It may not be the final. Again, you can break it down on why it doesn't make sense, or you can break it down. Well, this is why it's like that, and that's fine. I'm not saying that's not true.
No, you're right because I know.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say, it's all about the breakdown. That's why they create the chart so people can break it down.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying to the consumer they don't care about the breakdown. That's all I'm saying, and they're making a decision based off what the chart. They're not they're not going by common sense. They're not going by quality. They're just going by it's number one. That's it. That's all I'm saying.
And then let's be clear too. He is able to draw in an audience that doesn't normally go to the movies, and that's black women.
True.
Black women went to see this movie in droves last weekend. I don't know about this weekend. I don't know what the word of mouth is, but at least a lot of my Facebook friends, you know, I saw that they go to movies. I'm like, well, you never go to the movies. Oh, honey, it's Elba. I'm going. You
know? Yeah, I mean, so, I went to the movie and I saw it with nothing but black people. And I'm living in an area where there's no black people, so I know that obviously it matters to a degree.
They were busting them in to go to the
I mean, it's the same reason Tyler Perry. I mean, you could say his doesn't matter for whatever reasons, but obviously, if it's number one, it matters to somebody. Somebody's like, I want to make some money. Hey, I may not pay him as much as I pay Tom Cruise or Denzel, but I do know that he does have a number one movie under his belt. So, I mean, something.
Let me ask a let me pose a question to Sean. Now, you just brought up the fact that women came out in droves to see him in No Good Deeds.
Black women.
Black women. Are you saying that if he were to play Green Lantern, black women would go out in droves to see him in that?
Perhaps. That was the point that I was going to make. Hey, yes.
You don't think that teenage white girls and young 20-year-old white women aren't going to Thor and Captain America?
But you're talking about white folks versus black folks.
No. At least my Facebook friends, you know, I had a lot of friends from back in Georgia. They were going to see Thor in droves too because of Hemsworth. And I'm like, the movies.
About, talking about black women or white women?
Yeah, black women. Black women.
We're going out to see Chris Hemsworth.
Yes.
They're going to see Brad Pitt.
They're going to see Brad Pitt and all the rest of them. Why wouldn't they?
That's how they get down on the West Coast, because I saw Thor 2. I was the only black person in maybe two other people.
Because I saw Thor 2 with the screening, right? And so I saw a lot of my friends. They were, you know, oh, girl, we going, da-da-da. And I'm like, the movie's not good. They were like, oh, I don't care. I just want to see Thor. But I'm like, do you understand the movie isn't really that good? So why would you go waste your money to see a movie that isn't that good? And I just want to see Hemsworth. I said, well, he's not shirtless that much in the movie. So if that's why you're going, you may want to save your money or, you know, go to, you know, YouPorn or something if you want to see that. So there is an audience for there's a market for black women, you know, for those type of movies if you put the right person in that role. So yes, you put Idris Elba at a lead, you know, Green Lantern, if you cast them, they will come, to paraphrase a very bad movie in my opinion.
How come they didn't come to Pacific Rim then?
He's not the lead in that movie.
He's a featured character.
He was not the selling point of that movie.
But again, that movie was highly successful. The lead guy was a big draw.
Now. I'm talking about demographics.
He wasn't the lead. He wasn't the selling point of the movie. They sold No Good Deed on the back of Idris Elba. They didn't sell it on Taraji P. Henson. They sold it on Idris Elba.
Well, okay. All right. This is not even an argument worth having. I'm just trying to determine why black women would come out and see, based on what you're telling me, why they would come out and see him as Green Lantern, because
they like him.
I understand, but I understand from the consumer point of view to speak to Mike's point, but I'm talking about from the executive's point of view. Why would they green light a film starring him in a superhero role when the only movie I can think of, and that's what my question was, what film has he opened that would tell a Hollywood suit, yeah, it's worth green rolling this bankrolling.
No good deeds.
Now, to be fair, Q.
But you've already said that was only, there was no competition to open that film. So
but
that's
it still made money, regardless of it not having anything to compete against. It still made money.
I mean, what movie would not want to have competition it opened against? So that's why I don't see how that really, of course, that's the ideal position.
My question is then, what was your argument about, well, that doesn't really count because there was nothing else to open against to determine if he really was a draw?
Because the because the studio is making a big deal about the film being number one at the box office, and I say it's because they didn't have anything else to open against. Now, the second argument to that is that although it did not have anything to open against, it brought in an audience that doesn't normally go to the movies, which is black women. Black women will only go to see The Best Man Holiday, stuff like that. Morris Chestnut, whatever. And this one.
Well, let's be clear here. We're saying in larger numbers because black women go
in larger numbers.
All
yes,
kind of
yes,
movies.
Yes, yes, yes. No, I'm not that naive to the world. But generally, I saw more excitement about a movie. Black women, at least in my circle, excited about going to a movie. That's the first one I'd seen since The Best Man Holiday. And how many movies have opened in between?
And there's always an audience for those movies. And a lot of times Hollywood seems to always want to act like they're surprised when a Tyler movie or the best, Holiday's movie, Best Man movie opens up. And it's like, wow, this was number one or this was number two this week against such a... So that audience is always there. They know that. I mean, obviously, this movie opened in less theaters than the other movie that came out that week. Almost by was it Dolphin Tale 2, right? As a sequel.
Yeah, that was his competition.
That opened in 3,600 theaters. No Good Deeds was only in 2,100. So, I mean, obviously, and there's a huge difference, Good Deeds brought in 24 million. Dolphin Tale was 15. So, obviously, there's a huge audience going to these, and there's even less theaters to see it in by far.
And also, black women go in groups. They go in big groups, too.
Again, I guess what I'm saying is I understand that black women went to see him in No Good Deeds. I don't know that translates into them going to see him in a what's perceived as a non-black movie, and especially in a geek-friendly superhero role. That's what I'm saying.
But I just gave you an example. Thor.
No. Right.
I look at this. I see what you're saying, Q. But the other part of it would be to say he probably may have more of I'm taking race out of this for a sec. If you were to put him against a Downey Jr., who would you put in Iron Man? Versus, would you take a guy who's had some box office success, who's sort of relevant, or you take a guy that was from relevant years ago?
You lost me.
Well, in terms of, I could easily say I could see Eldris being picked to be in, say, a Green Lantern right now. He's got a number one movie. He's been in a hit TV show. He's hot, kind of hot right now. He could be bubbling. Where as opposed to, well, let's go get Robbie Downey Jr. What has he done?
What was this hit TV show?
Robert Downey Jr.?
No, Idris Elba.
Luther, The Wire, right? He's got two series under his belt. And he's been in some other movies. Been in a lot of different movies recently, right? Good or bad. And Tyler Perry, like I said, good or bad. I'm just saying he's obviously more bubbling at this time than Robert Downey Jr. was more bubbling when they picked him to be Iron Man. And they went with the guy that's somewhat could be, he's not hitting right now, but he may fit the role better. So I'm just saying if they can choose to do that versus a guy who's got number one, I could easily see them picking Idris Elba to be in, and again, to be in Green Lantern or whatever. Obviously he's got some pedigree right now.
And you got, and Q, on top of that, would it have Chris Hemp? Is Chris or Liam? Well, that Hemsworth boy done before he was Thor. What had Andrew Garfield done?
Well, I can ask you about Chris Hemsworth.
Spider-Man.
I can ask you about Chris Hemsworth. He was in Star Trek
as a minor bit character, but no one went to go see that movie. Well, you were saying what sort of reasons why they again if they gave him because of that bit part in Star Trek means he could be Thor, then if that's the case, then you really would get Idris Elba to be a character because he's bigger than he was.
No, wait a minute. You're comparing Idris Elba's appearance in Thor with Chris Hemsworth's appearance?
No. I'm saying Idris Elba, you said the reason they'd have Chris be in Thor because of that small little party at the beginning of Star Trek. If that's enough for you, then it must be enough. Do you have Idris Elba be in a new movie being a superhero now because he's way bigger than Chris Hemsworth ever was when he was chosen to pick Thor. And you're saying no? He was not bigger?
No, I'm saying no. That does not tell me that I need to put Idris Elba is 42. Chris Hemsworth is in his late 20s. That's the
So you think you choose it more on age as opposed to what's bigger at the marketplace and a box office.
In terms of Hemsworth versus Elba, I would say Hemsworth is younger and he has more staying power, if you will, in terms of aging into a franchise than Elba does.
I can't buy that.
Why not?
I would, again, what would be the point of saying you have number one movies and use a box office draw? Like,
well, it depends on the character too, Mike. I mean, does it make, other than Robert Downey Jr., who was an anomaly because he nailed it out of the park his first go around as Iron Man, if I'm, and Sean, I would hope you back me up on this, if I'm looking long term in terms of a franchise, maybe 3, 4, 5 pictures, I want a guy who's going to age well with the 3, 4, 5 pictures.
So a guy that's, you say, is 42, is that how old he is? He's not going to be able to last to do 3 or 4 pictures?
He might, but what I'm saying is if I'm dealing with a million...
You take an unknown dude because he's younger.
No, I...
Well, you know Black don't crack. Come on, he can play that role.
Well, Sean, you know what I'm talking about.
I know.
Well, why would they get a Samuel Jackson then? He was older than both of them, isn't he?
You talking about for Nick Fury?
That's the character.
You talking about Nick Fury?
Yeah, he's in multiple movies.
Well, I can answer that as well. Because Nick, as far as I know, the character in the ultimate Nick Fury, Samuel L. Jackson was the inspiration for that character. And plus, Samuel L. Jackson is not the featured player in any of these Marvel films. So it doesn't matter if he ages a little bit. It's the main characters like Chris Evans or Scarlett Johansson. Or
so you thinking they picked those guys because of their age, not because of what they brought to this?
Their age. See, you're trying to narrow it down to one thing.
I'm just saying that's what you said. I'm asking you the question.
No, I didn't. I said their age and their acting chops and their pedigree.
What pedigree did he have? Again, going back, now you're bringing two other things into it. But aside from that bit part he had in Star Trek, what other pedigree did he have?
He had the acting chops. The scene in Star Trek was a memorable scene, even though it was a short scene. And when he auditioned, he must have knocked it out of the park.
Okay.
Now, I'm not saying Idris Elba wouldn't audition for Green Lantern and knock it out of the park, but they would say, this at least at my paltry level of casting a role, not only do I look at how well they perform the role, but I look at, does he look the part? This is something that trips us up all the time. Does he look the part? Is he going, you know, the analog being, well, you know, we want to do 5 pictures. Well, he's going to be near 50 by the time we get to the last picture. Is that a wise financial decision to go into? Might he get hurt? You know, who knows? So it's all part of the consideration.
All right.
Sean, am I right or wrong?
You are in between.
Now, see, I'm going to have to quote Yoda. I'm going to tell Yoda now. I cannot teach this one.
Well, first, I already know a lot anyway, so it's not much you can teach me. But, I mean, you can say, hey, and this, I know this is morbid, it's probably not going to come across the right way, but for instance, the Fast series. Okay, they cast Paul Walker. Now, they didn't know that this was going to be a long franchise,
right?
But he's dead now. So anything can happen.
Where are you going with that?
No, I'm just saying, you're saying they cast based on age.
Right.
Paul Walker was a young guy. He was cast as a younger character. The franchise kept going. He's now unfortunately passed away. So even if you cast young, it doesn't mean that your actor's
going to be around. Sean, are you serious, Sean? Sean, are you for real?
I'm saying anything can happen. That's what I'm saying.
Wait, hold on. What you're suggesting, using that logic, what you're suggesting is when people cast a role, they say, well, is he going to die?
No, that's not what I'm saying at all. That's not what I'm saying at all. But you said that they cast based on age. Can a character keep going? Well, it really doesn't matter. They've got makeup. They can make people look younger. They can make people look older. Doesn't matter how old they get. That's a fixable problem. That's nothing. Can they act? Can they bring people asses in the seats? That's what matters. It doesn't matter how old they are.
Oh, let me ask you this question. Why do you think all of the – look, okay, you're saying it doesn't matter how old they get. Why do you think they cast a young guy to play Green Arrow? Why do you think they cast a young guy – now, these are TV shows that are going to go on possibly way longer than movies.
What about TV shows, though?
What does it matter? Why do they?
Well,
cast
they do matter because the TV show goes on for can go on for years, right?
Cast young people in these roles. Why do you think that is? Why do you think they?
Well, was Christian Bale young?
There's a term called CW-ification.
Was Christian Bale young when he was cast as Batman?
He was cast for three films.
Right. I'm just saying, was he young when he was cast for the first one?
I don't know how old he was. How old was he?
I don't know. I'm just asking you.
So what's the point? Why are you asking?
Well, the point is, I don't think he was. He was definitely older than the guys playing Thor and Captain America.
Well, and to answer your question, I'm not. Again, I'm not familiar with the properties that you're talking about. But if it's on CW, they cast young to cast. That's their market. Their market is a young teenage. I know we've discussed this. It's a young female audience. That's who they want to attract. So they're going to cast. A younger person versus an older person.
Why do you think major characters in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is on Fox, why are they young? Why do you think they cast this new show, Scorpions? It's all about young people in these genius roles.
For TV,
This is not coincidence.
But again, it is for TV. It is different.
Why is it different?
You don't know the difference between TV and movies.
I know. I want you to tell me why.
You don't think it? I know. You don't. Are you trying to test my knowledge?
No.
Because it's TV, man. It's totally
so
different.
So what y'all both tell me is Giant got the answers.
Basically.
I don't know what the difference is. The casting, why does it matter if it's TV or film when you're talking about casting?
That's why didn't they cast the guy from Smallville to be in Superman then if it didn't matter?
Because he had been in Smallville for 10 years maybe?
So what? Now it matters?
I don't think they wanted the continuity of the show to have to be beholden to that to go into the films. Plus, they cast him as a young Superman, and he looked too young to play. How are you going to let him play the adult Superman when he was supposed to be Clark as a boy? And he did not look like fully grown Superman. That's probably why.
You just said the whole point was him to be young. So he can go for four or five movies.
Well, maybe he could have played Superman. I don't know why they didn't put him in the film. But I gave you my reason. I think it's because they didn't want to have the continuity of Smallville have to leak into the films, because that Smallville created its own universe separate of the Superman franchise. I think that's the main reason why
that
they didn't
cast sense. That makes sense. Let's go back to where we started here. We'll wrap this part. So going back to Idris Elba, So the argument.
I love hold up. I love how you say, let's get back to reality. Like, I'm the crazy cat.
No. I mean, we're going on a tangent. I want to bring us back so we can wrap it up. So sort of our argument was about a guy like Idris Elba playing a major superhero in a movie, and sort of the debate was between, one, was his box office success, his recent box office success, would that be something that could be used in his favor? And then the other part was, well, his age could be a hindrance to him playing one of these superhero characters. That's kind of what we were talking about, right?
Yeah.
All right. I personally, I could see him being a bigger character. No, again, no different than, how The Rock is going to be playing. So these guys are not young guys. I can understand your point. I just think that a good actor could, if whatever direct, again, we can argue is why are they pulling Ben Affleck for many? But again, that's a whole nother conversation. But he's not a young guy. And he could conceivably be this character for a number of movies, right? And he's one of the most major characters of all time in the movies. So I just think there's a lot of different reasons why you could go with these people or not. I guess we will see. But Idris Elba, great actor. Go ahead. You can finish it.
Yeah.
Up.
I was just going to say one thing about Idris. He has done something on screen that very few actors have been able to do, and that's still a scene from Denzel Washington. So if anybody's got the action chops, it's this guy.
What movie is this?
Yeah.
American Gangster.
I have to go see that again.
Remember, he was the guy that he shoots in the street.
That's right. I don't remember him still in the scene, but I do remember.
I don't know. I thought he was riveting in the little screen time that he had. I don't know.
Now I would say that's just me. My man Wesley definitely stole some screen time from Denzel.
What?
Have yo Nagras never seen Mo Betta Blues?
I'm co-signing with you, right?
Yeah, all right.
He put it down.
Go back and go Go back and see America. I mean, he's not in there long. He's only in there for like 10, 15 minutes. But just humor me and go back and watch American Gangster, at least the part that
he's. I'll go watch it. I got that movie. All right. Shout out to Idris.
You know what?
Come on the show sometime, Idris. We love you. We love you.
The one thing about Idris Elba is I know he tried this in Prometheus, and I can't. I want to say there's another time. Maybe it was No Good Deeds, a trailer I saw. He has not mastered that Southern accent.
Yeah, it was Prometheus. That's a whole nother thing. I don't know why they make these actors and do accents when they can and when it sounds pitiful. Okay, let's just rewrite the character. Let's just not make them from the South.
That's what they did with Halle Berry and Storm, which was probably well advised.
Let's not talk about that. Halle Berry should be banned from all comic book movies.
Oh, wait, come on now. Don't say that.
What was that movie she had?
Catwoman.
Catwoman. Horrible.
That was not a comic book. That was not a comic book adaptation, though.
It's a comic book movie. It's not a great adaptation. I can't even say these words. But anyway, let's get off that.
She can do no wrong in my eyes.
Your eyes, right?
even extant, as horrible as that was, it was great.
Okay. Going in, lastly here, let's talk about Doctor Strange. So Marvel is pushing forward with Doctor Strange. As I said, shooting is going to start in Pinewood Studios. Just shout out to Star Wars. They're going to be shooting there. Movie's coming out 2016. And still have not announced any casting on this movie. But I got to throw it out there. Are you guys looking forward to seeing Doctor Strange hit the big screen?
Yes. Yeah. I'm curious because if they stick to the origin story, it's really a tale about, you know, redemption because for people who don't know the origin of Doctor Strange, he was this big time surgeon, all about getting paid, has a wreck, his hands are ruined, he can't do his, you know, do his skill anymore, and then he goes out to seek enlightenment and finds the Ancient One who humbles him and teaches him the ways of the mystic arts. It's a really good story.
I have to say his and Big Sexy, you probably will remember this. I think it's Origins of Marvel Comics, the trade that came out like the late 70s.
I'm looking right at it.
I remember reading that, and I just found that his origin was one of the most fascinating of all of them. It kind of reminded me a little bit of Captain Marvel, Billy Batson going into the tunnel and finding the ancient wizard. But I think that would make for a great movie. He's not one of my favorite characters, but I've always found his origin story to be interesting.
Exactly. I agree with that completely.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, they dropped his name in Captain America Winter Soldier. So I'm curious how he obviously has, or he's being watched by S.H.I.E.L.D. So I'm curious how they're going to play that into the movie and that whole thing.
I wonder if they're going to have the manservant Wong in this. And if they do, you know they're going to change him up. You know that because they don't want to get any mail.
Well,
maybe he'll be black.
Why would they have to change? They would have to change his. He couldn't dress in the robes and talk in a crazy accent, but he could be like Thor's. They changed Thor, one of the three guys. What are those three guys?
The Warriors Three.
Yeah, Hogan and
Fandral and Volstagg.
Right, they were all three white men in the comics, but one of them was Asian.
No. Hogan always has looked Asian.
What?
Hogan has always looked a little Asian to me, going way back.
Back in the time.
Okay. I don't want to.
If you look at the Simonson stuff and you look at some of the later Kirby stuff, yeah. You can definitely see it there.
I got to check that. I don't remember him ever looking Asian, but not that it's a problem, but.
No, not at all.
If they made him an Asian character and he didn't come across stereotypical. They could just change it up like that, make it more modern. That's all.
Yeah, I'd be okay with that.
Well, with that said, let's go around real quick and we'll wrap this up. So, I know we can find you at the gym, sir, but where else can they find you, Big Sexy?
You can find me on Twitter under Big Sexy and Sack. I got to go to the gym and keep my big up. And on Facebook under Mark Wiggins. And with that, gentlemen, I'll speak to you later.
All right. Sean Hill, where can they find you?
Okay, you can find me at on Twitter at Hill Street Views, also on Facebook, Sean Hill and Real Movie Talk, and also the blog, hillstreetviews.blogspot.com, where I have actually forgotten to mention I have a new article up, Defending Kanye, No One Man Should Have All That Power. So check that out. Try to defend the undefensible, apparently. We're talking about Wheelchair Gate. So check out that article and also reviews of Tusk, This Is Where I Leave You, and A Walk Among the Tombstones. And then next week we'll have a review of The Equalizer.
All right. Mr. Ant Pooh.
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter under Ant Pooh. I'll have a new comic books column up at 401 Mania, the Comic 8 Ball, tomorrow night, as well as a new wrestling column at Knockout Nation and AllHipHop.com, Breaking Kayfabe, on Wednesday.
All right, sir. Mr. Q Storm.
Oh, well, as soon as we get off this off the podcast, you can find me in my family room checking out the Gotham show, since I missed it. Besides that, you can catch me at qstorm.com/lightningstrikes. Today, I'm happy to say I'll be putting up the second chapter of my worldwide tour on YouTube at The Real Q Storm, R-E-E-L. You can catch me on Facebook as Michael Jones. I'm taking a lot of heat. And you can catch me on Twitter at QStorm3476. It's so funny. I am nearly in my 50s, and it's just so funny to be talking like this about all this new technology.
Well, you say you're taking a lot of heat. What was that in reference to?
Well, you know, I think you joined one of the comic book forums that I'm a member of. I think I saw you post something on Fantastic. Mm-hmm. And boy, this is a new generation, man, out here. New generation of geeks, boy. If you even offer up a different opinion, they're not having it. So that's I'm taking heat on all sides.
Sounds kind of like the show.
I can deal with y'all. Y'all.
Sounds fine.
Just a coincidence. That's all.
Yeah, I suppose so.
We love you. Oh, and you can find me here, podcastjuice.net. Let's go to Facebook and let's like the page. That's the first thing we got to do. Second thing we're going to do is go on to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. Helps us out in the ratings. We would love that. Hey, you already know what to do. Check me out on Twitter, MDean, and just continue to listen to the show and support it and share it. And hopefully it brings some joy and entertainment to your life. We will see you next time. Peace.